the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, episode 614. It is the bye week, but dadgummit, the Cardinals have done it again. They've won four in a row. They beat the New York Jets. Not just beat them, they broke them. They broke the Bears. They broke the Jets. And Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, is with me in this show. What in the world is happening with this Cardinals team? Because, you know, there was a time, and we were talking about before the show, you know, back when if you lost the Cardinals, you got fired like Mike McCarthy did when the Cardinals beat the Packers in 2018. The Cardinals are breaking teams right now. The Bears are falling apart. The Jets were on the verge, and they look like, well, they ended their season. They put the nail in the coffin for the Jets season, and I'm here for that, honestly, because, you know, I saw this hilarious thing, because Jets fans have it as bad as the Cardinals fans, only over the years. But here's the thing that's funny, is that by getting Aaron Rodgers, they had a sliver of hope, and they're like, whoops, nope. Nope, four plays in, torn Achilles, come back this year. The roster's good. Aaron Rodgers is playing okay, and there's no reason for them to not be good, and they're just bad at football this year. And that's what happened, is like the Cardinals were great, but before we get into that part, but my goodness, what is this team right now? They're now 6-4. They lead the NFC West. They're going to lead the NFC West coming out of the bye no matter what. And so, this is uncharted territory for a team that is, we can say this, they're officially ahead of schedule, like for what expectations were. And we're right there, aren't we? We're at right at the point where now we are upping expectations, and now we are 6-4 with a winnable schedule the rest of the way. We now have to start setting our sights on the postseason and winning a division, don't we?
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting from here, Jess, because the 49ers got Christian McCaffrey back, and you know, they didn't look great needing, having a close win over a really injured, depleted Bucs team. But they're still, I think you and I would agree, they're still the class of the division, just simply because they're defending champs. I mean, they're the defending NFC champs on top of that. So like, they're, until they're actually dead, they're the team to beat. And the nice thing is the Cardinals have a game on them this year. So it just becomes a matter of you know, surviving. And they have seven games left. They're sitting at 6-4. You look at that, ideally, you would think, 11-6 probably
holds them off.
Yeah, take to win the division. But the nice thing is, and people know how much I despise this whole, like, the way it says it, but they control their own destiny, right? Well, the Cardinals truly do. They're 2-0 in the division, which is very unlikely if we had to guess heading into the bye week, right?
Right.
And they play four of their final seven games in the division. So ideally, you know, going 4-3 would not be great, but it would still put them in a position to win the division, you know, get to 10-7 and all that. And then you look at the games outside the division. That Minnesota Vikings game is going to be hell. It's in Minnesota. It's going to be a big game for Minnesota as well, because that'll probably be right when the Vikings are really fighting for that, you know, playoffs positioning or spot at that point. And then you have two games that I would say should, but not will be winnable games. And the New England Patriots and Carolina Panthers. So you look at their schedule, and we discussed it last week, the fourth easiest schedule by win percentage in the NFL, their final, including this Jets game. That was, you know, that was why getting out to 6-4 and being a game above where you and I had them heading into the bye, right, was so important, because the back half of the schedule is on paper easier. I mean, the Rams looked lethargic again last night. They looked old and
that Rams team is weird right now. They're so weird.
And then the Seahawks have just looked like they've fallen off a cliff, right? And so it looks again on paper like a two-team race in the NFC West. But I think as Cardinals fans, we are fairly ingrained to be like, okay, prove it to me, please.
Right? Yes. Yes. But like we said, like they win this game and we can start getting excited. I think it's time to legitimately be excited, because now they really are like they're going to be in first place after the bye. We'll talk about on the show later this week how we want the weekend to go. And, you know, they pick up one of those wins in the next three. They're 7-6. They should beat the Patriots and the Panthers. They'd be 9-6. And then you've got the Rams and the 49ers to close out the year, which means it's very, very, very possible that it will come down to that final game, right? Don't you think that that's probably how it's going to line up, is that week 18 will determine the division? And that's a wild thing to think.
And not just that, Jess, but let's just play hypotheticals here. Let's just say the Cardinals have secured the division by that point, which I don't think either of us would feel confident in saying that's happened. But let's just say that the Cardinals have secured the division going into that game at home against San Francisco, right? The reality of that becomes Atlanta has the same record right now. They're right above Arizona with a 3 seed. Obviously, in this scenario, the Cardinals would probably want to be the 3 seed overseeing Minnesota, or likely.
So you don't have to play the 49ers the very next week again.
Right. But that's what I was going to say. Most likely it's going to be Washington, Green Bay, or San Francisco. And we know how hard it is to beat an NFL team 3 times in a season. So, you know, you get the 3 seed and maybe you get a better shot, you know, things of that nature. I don't want to say the 2 seed is out of reach, because Philadelphia has been a really Jekyll and Hyde team, even though they are 7-2 this year. They've been a very unimpressive group in a lot of their wins. Now they have some absolute dominating performances, but those have been over a very bad NFC East, you know, over the Giants and the Cowboys. They have some skin of their teeth wins over teams like the Jaguars, the Browns, the Saints this year, and the Packers in the first game of the season. And then they have some, you know, their 2 losses aren't exactly from world beaters. So it's an interesting group. They finish with Washington. I'm just going over the important games: Washington, the Rams, the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Commanders. So again, they could conceivably lose 3 to 5 more games. They also have the Panthers, Cowboys, and Giants again. So it's like, you know, they're at worst finishing with 10 wins this season. And then, you know, so is the 2 seed off the table? Maybe. I think if they fall one more game behind Philly, it's off the table, right? Like, you can't be three games out of second place. But you know, their conference record behind Atlanta right now, which is why they're in the fourth position. And Atlanta, they, you know, they've again been a lot.
I'm buying the Atlanta stock, but what are you doing losing to the Saints?
Well, and they have an interesting game this week, and you know, we'll discuss it about, you know, with the Broncos. Then they get the Chargers, who have looked really good outside of their loss to the Cardinals. And then they have that same Vikings team and then the Commanders. So again, you know, their seven final games, they have a bye week in there too. Their seven final games, they have three gimmies as well. And again, everything's on paper, but the Raiders, the Giants, and the Panthers. So, you know, you're looking at it, this could be a team that finishes at 9-8, and you wouldn't bat an eye. And that would win the NFC South, right? Like, that's the NFC South this year. So that's the thing, Jess, is there's some options. The one seed's off the table, not just because they're three games behind Detroit, barring another injury. And I would assume we're talking a Jared Goff type of injury, right? But Detroit's basically going to be the one seed. I mean, they've looked absolutely phenomenal this year. They're playing at a high level. The fact that they've basically not missed a beat, even after
Jared Goff can throw five interceptions, they still pull out a win at the end of the
right.
game.
And the fact that they haven't missed a beat after losing Aiden Hutchinson, I think that just speaks to what they've built there. I mean, you look at what they've done post Aiden Hutchinson, and it's been, like you said, impressive. I mean, the fact that Jared Goff throws five interceptions and they win a game, like, you're like, what on earth?
that's one of the, and granted, like, that's one of the wildest stats you ever see, because turnovers are critical. You know, five interceptions. Like, that was, like, as other people have said it, but that was entering Jared Goof territory. Right. And right. Then he turned into stud Jared Goff in the fourth quarter.
Right. And so that's, you know, those are all really, you know, that's where they're at within the NFC. You know, you look at it, the biggest issue right now is there's no other NFC West team in. And so the question becomes, do Washington, because I think you and I would agree with this. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Washington, so I don't want this to come off wrong, but I think we would agree that Philly, Detroit, and Atlanta are pretty close to being the division winners. Now, there's only a game separating Philly and Detroit from behind them, right? But they look like the three classes of those divisions. And so the Cardinals' issue now becomes, they don't want to be like Atlanta, where their only route of a playoff berth is winning the division. Because, again, as you said, they come out of the bye, they're still in first place. They'll be tied, but they'll still be in first place because they have the head-to-head over San Francisco right now. But they don't want to be at 9-7 going into the last game, because that likely does not get them in the playoffs. So that'll be kind of where we look at, and as we reset our expectations for this team, right? I mean,
like, it now, like, the way they're playing right now, it would be a disappointment to miss the postseason. And so that now we just ratcheted up expectations. Now, if they just, like, if we're doing big picture, if they just miss the playoffs, that's on schedule. But, you know, you get 6-4, you're in 4 in a row, you're playing the way you're doing, you're in first place. Like, the 49ers aren't running away at the division. You're in first place, and you have an easy stretch. You know, expectations now go up. It's like, okay, we want this to happen, and that now it kind of should happen. If this Cardinals team is what we're seeing, they should be in the playoffs.
The biggest issue is going to come down to just, even if they come out, and I know we're going to discuss this later, but even if they come out of the bye and get a win against Seattle, that Minnesota game is that's a tough one, because you look at it, Minnesota is going to be 9-2. Like, it'll be very, very surprising if they are not 9-2 in that game. And there's just this aura of being 9-2 against, set, let's just say 7-4, of like, you have to once again prove yourself that you belong and that this hasn't been a fluke, right? And that's, I think, where the Cardinals are going to come out. It'll be even worse, and not that we expect it to or anything like, but it would be even worse if they come out and lose that game and they're 6-5, right? Because again, a 9-2 team, and you're staring down the barrel of 6-6, and all of a sudden, all of that good, good momentum, good media is like, now you're like, oh, that four, you know, that 5-1 stretch was the fluke. No matter that they beat a bunch of teams over 500, that'll be what's looked at as the fluke. So that's the line that they play with coming out of this bye week, but we never expected 6-4. I mean,
nope,
not, and especially when they were 2-4. We were like, if you can get to 4-6, like if you can win two of your final four, we'll be like, okay, you know, 4-6 at the bye. Like we said, that back half of the schedule, you could see them winning four games and going 4-3, and then, like you said, on schedule 8-9. You're like, wasn't pretty, but they got there. Now they're at 6-4, and it's like, you basically are saying,
don't Kingsbury this, right?
Right. You're basically saying, and again, I don't think Jess and I are saying this, but we also are raising our expectation levels based on what they've done on the field. And we're going to say that 4-3 needs to come through anyways. I don't want to say they have to, because that's an exaggeration, but they really need to finish at 10-7 at this point after the 6-4 start.
Yes. Otherwise you lose the momentum of what they did.
Yeah. What they did, what they accomplished to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is fun. We didn't expect to be talking about a team. This is fun. This is absolutely fantastic.
Well, this was last year. Last year, Seth. That was next year. That's what we expected.
Yes.
Next year. We expected, like, hey, they're going to be at this place right now, you know, in 2025, and we'd be discussing this, like, hey, now, you know, can they wrestle the division away from the Packers, right? We didn't expect this
part. Niners.
The Niners. I was thinking about the Lions at that point. Sorry. So, you know,
no, Seth doesn't have a Lions podcast too. He's just confused.
I was actually going back to the Lions record last year to see where they were at. Cause it's interesting, man. I mean, those were the parallels we always talked about. Right. And in year two, Dan Campbell got them into 9-8. And remember, they were 2-6 as well. Now they were 1-6 at one point, but they were 2-6 at one point, and they finished at 9-8. The Cardinals only got to 2-4 at their lowest margin. So if they have a similar run where, you know, the Lions in that run had a streak where they went 6-1 and then they finished up 8-2, you know, on the back half, that's what you're looking for from this team.
Yep. Coming up next on Rise of Your Podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's actually talk about that game. We'll look at the offensive side of the ball, because, man, that was fun. That's coming up next on Rise of Red. We're back on the Rise of Red Podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking about the Cardinals, 31-6, absolutely dominant over the New York Jets. And isn't it starting to feel like that there isn't a defense that the Cardinals can move the ball against, because that Jets defense is supposedly good and it was number two against the pass, And they were carving up that pass defense early and often. They were not using the run game to set up the pass. They were cooking in the pass game. This Cardinals team offensively, like if we go back even to the Chargers game when they got that win, and we go back to the 49ers, only the Packers, and again, against the Packers, they kind of hurt themselves. And I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks. It doesn't appear that the Cardinals, that there is a defense that the Cardinals cannot be successful against. Detroit was their toughest matchup. But other than that, and maybe Minnesota will be that, but it's looking like at this point, they're able, if they're doing what they do, there isn't a defense that will stop them.
Yeah, and they came out in this game, and it was the efficiency that was the beauty of it, right, Jess? I mean, they came out in this game and they scored, and we all were like, okay, perfect. Like, to be fair, I mean, they've really done a great job off their script, off the rip, right? Every game, basically. Like, they get the ball, they're gonna go down and score. That's just what they've done. I still don't think that the James Conner not getting in call was correct. I think the ball in his arm was like over the goal line, but whatever. I mean, and I was texting some buddies because, I was in Vegas for this game and just watching the game at the sports book, and it was crazy, Jess. And the amount of Niners fans, and the Niners game was over, but the amount of Niners fans was insane, and they're watching this game rooting against the Cardinals, obviously. And it's funny to listen to that, because a lot of the conversation was like, I just didn't think they were this good. Like, how are they still doing this type of stuff? And then they come out, right, and they get the stop, and then the Packers have, what we've kind of unfortunately come to expect from the Cardinals defense, right? A real, real easy time down the field.
Oh yeah.
And they got to the 11, it's first and 10, and you're like, all right, 7-7, no big deal. You want to come out, you want to get this game back up. Like, you have to respond immediately. And they held, right? And they forced a field goal, and you're like, okay, all right. Kind of shaking your head, like, a little surprising, but that was good. And then they come up once again, they just drive down the field. And that drive was really impressive, because the only third down on that drive, Jess, was the third and goal play.
Yes, that's the crazy thing. Like, yeah, they were so incredibly efficient. They moved the ball so well. And it's, again, remember, this Jets defense was what was their strength. They gave up a lot of rushing yards, but the Cardinals were running the ball. They were throwing the ball, and they weren't getting pressure on Kyler. It was just offensively, it was easy. They scored on their first five possessions. They went touchdown, 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 got the field goal before the half, and then touchdown again. And after that, it was just slow, 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 slow. Each one of their touchdown drives increased in length. As the first one, they had the big James Conner play, so it was 2 minutes, 2 seconds, then it went 4:54, then it went 5:53, then it went 6:20 in their third quarter possession. It was 4 minutes, 9 seconds on their drive that gave them the field goal at the end of the half. So they were, this offense has been good, because they were cooking in the pass game, and then the second half, they just ran the ball. I'm just going to run the ball. And crazy, guess what they were able to do? They ran out the clock with DJ Dallas. How impressive is that?
And I did have one question for you, Jess. In the second quarter, they get the ball back with 4:09. Obviously, they take it down, kick the field goal. Did you feel like they were a little conservative there? I'm just always interested in what everybody's opinion is, because it just felt like it just felt like they were like, hey, we just need a field goal here and this game's over. And while I agree, and obviously hindsight it was, I would have preferred them to be a little more aggressive. And the ones I'm looking at is the third and one, fourth and one runs, right? Like, if you're gonna go for it and you're gonna try to get points, like, why not at least take a shot to try to get something? So because again, you're still getting there, but like that was my small critique of the offense on the day. Because outside of that, I mean, what are you gonna? I mean, two incompletions, so it's not like you complain about the passing game. The running game was effective enough in the first half. And then again, kind of what we've seen, they just kind of controlled things the second half. I mean, you look at it again, there wasn't a guy that did it, but you had 21 for Kyler on 3 carries. You had 62 for Trey on 10 carries. You had James Conner that was really bottled up from the rushing aspect, 12 for 33 and a touchdown, right? Amari was 3 for 22, and then DJ Dallas, as you said, 3 for 10. Like, that's a weird kind of incredible game to see. And then James Conner was the leading receiver in the game, so they did a great job of getting everybody involved. They did a great job of spreading the ball around and really taking advantage of what they had. And when you look at it from that perspective, Jess, like, this offense has become really impressive in how they milk the clock, but they're still scoring points, right? Like, it's not like they're punting a lot. It's not like they're turning the ball over or just, you know, kicking field goals. Like, they're scoring points. They put up, you know, 31 points against a good Jets team, or good Jets defense, I should say. Their team's not great. You know, the week before against a good Bears defense, 29, against a good Miami defense, 28. I mean, over 28 points in 3 straight games. The last game they didn't score that much was 17 in a win over LA. And that was kind of the turning point of things, where you're like, oh, this team can do anything offensively.
Right.
You know, they can run the ball down your throat. They can throw the ball all over the place, and then they can be balanced. And this was, I would say, the most balanced of games we've seen outside of the San Francisco and LA games, where those were, you know, the San Francisco game was probably the most balanced, but 169 yards rushing is tough to do. And so to see them over 400 yards of offense, no turnovers, and then to keep the Jets under 210 yards of total offense is kind of bananas, right? Especially
it's crazy.
Especially after the first 2 drives.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that's becoming, you know how we talked about, we've talked about their scheme, okay? Guess what? I don't know if they did this by design, but Kyler had over 300 yards against Miami when they were the number one pass defense. He had arguably, it wasn't quite as eye-popping because he just had the one touchdown pass. Should have been 2. It should have been 22 for 24 for 267 yards and 2 touchdowns against the number 2 pass defense in the NFL. And while he did get blown up on that one, like, oh my gosh, that hit that he took, a team that had 31 sacks, Will McDonald had 8 sacks coming in, Michael Clements was 4, like, this was a team that got after the quarterback, and they stonewalled that. They stonewalled that defense. You know, they were like, Kyler is in a groove right now, and it started with the San Francisco game. It continued with Miami, and he just didn't have to do anything against the Bears, but he was so it was just effortless. That's not that pass defense was good, but his ball placement, his rhythm. Remember how we were talking about, like, it was right before the Miami game, and we're like, it's not quite in sync. That passing game is 100% in sync now. Kyler is seeing the field extremely well. He's making good throws, making good reads, putting the ball in great places. And honestly, it did. It looked effortless. I don't know how you make 22 of 24 completions look effortless, but he did it. And then on the other side of the ball, and we'll talk about the defense in a second, Aaron Rodgers at one point had like 89 yards on 22 pass attempts, and he finished only with 151 on 35 passing attempts, which is some crazy, crazy thing. 151 divided by 4.3 yards per attempt. That was like Kyler's dink and dunk Kingsbury offense stuff when they were losing games and couldn't get the ball down the field. But it was just so good. Like a couple things I want to shout out, because Connor had a dominant game, even though it wasn't in the pass. It wasn't in the rushing game. It was in the pass game. But didn't it feel like this was, we have seen the breaking out, and not necessarily a breakout, but Trey Benson, he looked like he didn't belong in the NFL, on the field, like at the beginning of the year. Like there, he wasn't quite there. I described it on Sunday as his eyes and his feet match now. His eyes have caught up with his feet, and he's playing like he looks like an NFL running back. And, you know, the fact that he got nearly as many carries as Connor did is telling. He's getting more playing time. He's getting integrated into the offense. And that's kind of exciting to see.
Yeah, and you look at it, man, there's a lot to like. The first of it being that this group, you know, they offer differing things. And I know people are like, well, he's a different back than James. Now, he is physical, but nobody's as physical as James Conner. I mean, it's just not in their DNA. He's a little more athletic, right? He's got a little more burst to him, but he's learning how to run. And that was something you and I discussed, right? Is that he came out and he struggled, understandably. I mean, they're still rookies. He struggled to understand, like, hey, I'm not the most athletic guy on the field anymore. Like what was he, a 4.37 or whatever he was?
Yeah, 4.38, 4.39, something like that. But yeah, and he would, like, it was early on, it was, he knows where the play is going, so he gets there too fast. As opposed, like, when we saw, like, Amari Mercado as a rookie, like, the incredible patience with he had, Benson didn't have that. And so he was, it just looked like his eyes and his feet didn't match. Like, he was not seeing things. He knew where he was supposed to go and just would get to that spot and get tackled.
Right. And so then you go from there and you know, and he's all of a sudden started to grow in his running ability. And that's a big thing, man, because the reality becomes, as much as we love James Conner, we want that bell cow status, and his, you know, his 70 yards per game is going to get him over his 1,000 yards again, and, you know, back-to-back seasons and all of that. The reality of it becomes just like, if they don't have to get James Conner, you know, 17, what is he averaging right now? I'm just double checking. He's averaging 18 touches a game, just like, If they can keep him at 18 and he doesn't have to go into the 20s, and then a game like San Francisco late in the season, and he can give you 23, and we know what his 23 looks like versus, you know, other guys' 23, and you're like, oh yeah, that's what we need. So that's kind of where that's at. I think the maturation of Marvin Harrison Jr. and Kyler Murray as a duo has been beautiful to watch. I know people are going to be like, well, he's only going to put up, you know, what, 850 yards of offense. It's like, yeah, but he's going to put up 11 or 12 touchdowns. Like I get it. People want the numbers. And I jokingly was texting some buddies during the game because Kyler ran those two touchdowns in. And I go back to last week and you know, I saw some interesting conversations had about when Kyler missed Trey McBride in the end zone. And people were like, that's why he'll never be great. That's why you can't win with him. And I'm like, And I'm like, that's all that dude obsessed about after that. Like, literally after the game, a game that they dominated, he was frustrated with himself, not because of the stats, not because of anything else, but because he was frustrated with himself because he missed a gimme. He missed a layup, man. And he's like, you don't get very many of those, and that's on me. And it's like, this guy understands that he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders because everybody looks at him and goes, you just haven't shown us exactly what we want to see. And it's like, you know, a 289 yard, 3-touchdown game isn't what people want it to be, because it wasn't 289 passing yards and 3 passing touchdowns, right? It was 266 or whatever it was, passing yards and 21 rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. And so people don't look at it and go, oh, this was a great game by Kyler. They go, oh, he only threw 1 touchdown. Oh, last week, you know, oh, last week he didn't throw a touchdown. He missed that bunny. It's like, yeah, it happened. And so anyways, I was texting my buddies about it. And I was like, Kyler stinks, man. Just how do you run for 2 touchdowns and not throw them? You know, and that's an interesting thing to me, because I feel like fans,
like, he needs to throw it to himself.
Well, and it's almost like, well, you know, it doesn't matter that they're up to 13th in scoring. By the way, they're up to 13th in points against as well, Jess. But it's, you know, it doesn't matter that they're 13th and up to 13th in scoring. They're almost to 24 points a game, because they're not getting the points the right way, right? Like, oh, James Conner runs in. Oh, Kyler runs in. Oh, Trey McBride doesn't have a receiving touchdown. He only has that rushing touchdown. Like, it's like, so because they're not throwing enough touchdowns, but they're scoring at a good clip, you know, top half of the NFL. And over the last 4 games, or 3 games, as we discussed, they're averaging 29 points a game.
Yep.
I mean, but that's the thing. They're averaging 29 points a game, Jess, and Kyler's only thrown for 3 touchdowns. or is it 4? It might have been
4 now. It's 4 now, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, no, it's only 3. Yeah, he only threw for 3 touchdowns in the last 3 games.
Didn't he have 3? Didn't he have 3 against Miami?
No, he only had 2.
Just 2. Okay.
And so that's the thing. It's like, you're averaging 29 points a game, but you're not throwing for enough touchdowns. It's like, shut up. Like, really? Like
he's doing what he's being coached to do.
Not only that, but it's like they're having success.
Incredibly well.
Right. And it's like they're having success. And it's just wild to me that ends up mattering. And the fact of the matter that his touchdown percentage is still so high also speaks to, they're not throwing the ball a lot. Like, it's not so, like, they're not like, oh yeah, we gotta get these pass yards off, right? Like, everything is done with a purpose and an efficiency that we just, I mean, let's be honest, we just haven't seen before, man.
Like, no, it's been fun.
He's literally 16th in passing attempts. 16th. And it's like, this is a dude that's just not, he's not throwing interceptions. He's not throwing bad routes. And he's near the top of completion percentage. He's near the top of what they call success rate. Like, all of these numbers that, like, matter. Actually, he is at the top of success rate. I forgot. So it's a real odd number, but basically it's 40% of yards needed for a first down or 40% of yards needed on first down, 60 on second down, and 100% on third and fourth down. He's the highest. Like, nobody's better. And so, you know, I feel like people get caught up in other things. They're like, oh, well, he's got to do this better. He's got to do this better. But it's like, this year, not cumulatively or anything like that, but this year, he's playing like a top five quarterback in the NFL.
He is. And that's like, he's playing at the, like, it's just the, he's not getting video game numbers. Like, he had like that MVP year, that first half of 2021, when he was bonkers. He's playing the position so much better. Like, if you see the way he's handling the offense, the way he's making, like, not everything is a highlight reel. He's just making throws effortlessly. And then every once in a while, he springs away for it. And shout out to the offensive line, aside for the absolute blow up that Quincy Williams had on Kyler. But that was a Jets defense that's been getting after the quarterback. Zero pressures allowed by Kelvin Beachum, who lined up primarily against Will McDonald, who is having a fantastic year.
Well, and Jess, here's my capper on this whole situation. Look at the names that he's tied with or ahead of in passing touchdowns this year. Patrick Mahomes, Brock Purdy, Jalen Hurts, CJ Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Geno Smith, Dak Prescott, Jaden Daniels, and Matthew Stafford. Like, all, he's either tied or above all those guys. And he has fewer interceptions than all of them but Herbert. And he has more total touchdowns than all of them. So, doing, like you said, doing what is needed to win games is part of being a great quarterback. And so, yeah, would we love him to be putting up Joe Burrow or Lamar Jackson type numbers? Absolutely.
I've been waiting for the 5,000 combined rushing and passing yardage in, you know, 35 to 40 combined touchdowns. That's been, like, in my mind, video game numbers. But I know that's not always possible. But yeah, Gumman, I think that's legitimately what people are expecting. Either for him, and maybe this is the year the narrative changes because they finally win enough games, or they win a playoff game, because that's been, like I said before the season, this is what Kyler needs. He either needs big numbers or they need big wins.
Right.
And right now, they're getting big wins. They're moving toward a big number of wins, and he's playing, like, people who watch football, and Jonathan Gannon has believed in the beginning, and the fact that he is so convicted to believe that Kyler still hasn't hit his ceiling, like, can you play the position any better than he has over the last few weeks? It's hard to believe. Like, the only thing that could be better are his actual numbers, it's simply because they aren't passing the ball so much, because schematically they have this balance that you want to have on an offense. And this is something really fun and really, yeah, it's great to see the guys. Trey McBride is an absolute beast. Harrison had a great game. To see Trey Benson starting to step up, having the offensive line play the way it did. It was a 100, like, I didn't actually write it, but I like to do studs and duds. There was literally all studs on both sides of the ball. There was nothing disappointing to me in that on happened on either side of the ball in terms of individual players.
You know, and this will be my last thought, Jess. Think about it this way. The guys leading the NFL in touchdown passes this year, two of them have losing records.
It's because they have to pass the ball more.
And so it's like, what, to your point, like, what's more important? Is it to have the leading passer and leading touchdown thrower in Joe Burrow, or is it to be 6-4 and leading your division? Like, obviously everybody's gonna be like, oh yeah, well, I want both. It's like, well, so does everybody, right? Like, but at the end of the day,
Joe Burrow's there, like, I've got numbers, but I want wins.
Right.
He'd rather be winning.
Right, he'd rather not be third in his own division, right? So that's, I mean, just that's the reality of it, man. It's tough to please everybody, and when you've already set your mind to what you think about Kyler, then you'll make that the reality that you see. And it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. I mean, this has been a breakthrough season, in my opinion. And I think that as they flesh this offense out over the final, you know, over the final seven games and then into next year, you're going to see a guy that's going to probably be closer to that 30 to 35 touchdown passes and 40 to 45 total touchdowns from scrimmage, and a guy that's closer to that 4,500 total yards from scrimmage, you know, every year. Because that's the other thing, Jess. Remember, this dude's only 27, man. Like, it's wild to think that, I mean, it's wild to think that this is a guy that they have for the next, you know, however many years, and you look at the way he plays, his body, the way he takes care of himself, he could probably play at this level another, you know, 6 to 8 years before, you know, the athleticism starts to slip and things like that, that it would be a miraculous thing for the Cardinals, who've never had a homegrown quarterback, to get one that they could get for, you know, 10 to 12, maybe 14 years. Holy cow. What would that be like?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Coming up next on the Rise of Spirit podcast, this is our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball, because there were things to like there. That's coming up next on Rise of Spirit. We're back on the Rise of Spirit podcast, this is our Cardinals talk on the web, looking at the defensive side of the ball. And outside of those first two, like after the first two drives, it wasn't that the Jets quit. It's that they were broken, right? And this was a case where the Cardinals defense did just enough where they kept them to two field goals, and then they kept scoring, and then everything was messed up. They couldn't run the ball anymore. And you know, 207 yards, that is something to hold this Jets. Now, granted, this Jets offense, we've looked at it. Talent-wise, there's no reason for them to be as bad as they are, and yet they're just bad at football offensively. They have two good running backs in Breece Hall and Braylon Allen. They have a Hall of Fame quarterback. They have top-tier receivers in Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams, and yet they can do nothing offensively. And it would, you know, it'll start with just playing well when they got to the red zone, making that one play they needed on those first two drives. And then after that, it was the Jets pressing. They're not having fun. Aaron Rodgers isn't having fun. And that this offense has been atrocious for the Jets, but also the Cardinals defense hadn't been anything to write home about for a long time. And like you said, they're now up to 13th in points allowed. And that is, you know, three straight home games with no touchdowns allowed. They lost. I saw a stat. They held opponents to single digit scores in two consecutive games. They had allowed double digit points in 52 straight games, which was the longest active streak. And so, now granted, it was against the Bears, it was against the Jets, but they still did it. They're still, that defense doesn't make any sense. Now they're getting pressure on the quarterback. Xavier Thomas got another sack. Jesse Luketta got another sack. Budda Baker had his first sack since 2021. And once again, he was all over the place. He was so good.
And he almost killed Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I almost felt bad. Just think about this, right? You're talking about the defense and everything. Think about, as you said, how demoralizing it is, right? So the Cardinals come out, score pretty quickly. You said 2 minutes, 2 seconds. Jets get the ball back, 12:58. Take 5:10 off the clock, go down and kick a field goal. 63 yards, man. So the first drives were, you know, negligible. The Cardinals got the stop, obviously, but the Jets milked a ton of time off the clock. Really good drive. Obviously, not the result they wanted, but 11 plays, 63 yards, like, really good. Then the Cardinals come back and score, right? 454, 70 more yards, another touchdown. And the Jets come back out, Jess. They get the ball with 2:54 left in the quarter. They go 6 minutes and 17 seconds. They only get 43 yards and they kick another field goal, but they ran 12 plays, Jess.
12 plays for 43 yards. That's less than 4 yards a play. That was a wild stat.
And so they kick another field goal. So now it's 14-6, and you're like, all right, this is a big drive. The Cardinals go down, they score again, and you mentioned it, that 5:53, almost 6 minute drive, 10 plays, 70 yards. First double digit play drive of the game for the Cardinals. The Jets have had two. Think about this, Jess. Three drives for the Cardinals, okay? A little bit under 13 minutes of game time. The Jets had 23 plays in two drives and just under 11 and a half minutes of game time. Okay, so their 3-2 drives were basically the same amount of time. The Cardinals just resulted in three touchdowns. And then the next drive happened. The Cardinals kick off with 5:44 left in the half. The Jets go -9 yards. And so the Cardinals get the ball back with 4:09, and you're saying to yourself, points would be fantastic here. And then, like we talked about earlier, we liked a little more aggression, but we also understood kind of the gamesmanship of that situation, right? Like, they got really burned on a 2-for-1 early in the season by Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. So the last thing you wanted was to give New York that kind of, oh, we can come back if they were to get a 2-for-1. So you go down and kick the field goal. Then the Jets come out, and I got it. I mean, it's tough. 24-6. You're down 18, so you have to score three times. You need at least two touchdowns with at least one two-point conversion and then a field goal to tie the game. I mean, that's just to tie the game. So the Jets come out. Another 4:27 off the clock, 62 yards. They're at the 8-yard line. Jess, that's the second drive inside the 10. And they get nothing.
They fumbled.
And like you said, Xavier Thomas gets the sack. And then it's that drive, that field goal, that probably was the nail in the coffin, but the start of the third quarter to get the ball back with 10:30 left and the kickoff with 4:13 left and you're up now 31-6 and your defense, while it hasn't been great in this game, I mean, think about it, Jess. They're in three drives, they had 75 yards, right? In those three drives, they had about 75 yards. Or 175 yards, excuse me. They held them to 6 points. They were inside the 10 twice and got 3 points to show for it.
Well, like, and the difference was in the first half, you know, the Jets had only 85 total yards. The Cardinals had 239 yards in the first half.
And it's
it's been wild. It's been wild to see this defense that makes no sense at all why they're being effective.
Well,
be effective.
Part of it, Jess, is the Jets had six possessions. So think about this. Like, the Cardinals have gotten to the point now in these last three games. We'll see if it continues coming out of the bye, but in these last three games, they've gotten to the point where it's almost odd if they score in under 4 minutes, right? Like, most of their drives are 4+ and typically 5+ minute drives because they run the ball so effectively. So when you're not having to throw the ball, the clock doesn't stop, right? That incessant clock stopping on incomplete passes. And then in this game, when you are throwing the ball so efficiently that you only have two incompletions, now the clock's just never stopping. Like, the clock, so, like, when you have, I mean, think about this, Jess. They got the ball with 15 minutes. They didn't get the ball back until 4 minutes and 13 seconds left. And then they didn't get the ball again until 11 minutes left in the game. like they had two possessions after the opening kickoff. that's just a wild, wild stat to think about, because the Cardinals were basically, I mean, we made fun of the Jets earlier. Let's make fun of the Cardinals a little bit. Their third or their second drive of the second half, Jess, six plays, 33 yards, but they held the ball for almost five minutes. Like, that is demoralizing, because even you, even though you got to stop, it took 5 minutes of game time off the clock. Like, now they're like, you're just at the, and so that's the thing. So the defense comes out and it's like, oh, you want to throw the ball? Have fun, man. Go throw the ball all over the place. Go throw the ball. We don't care. And so they, you know, they get the ball with 11:08 left. And again, they had a great drive, and it comes up short on 4th and 4. And, you know, there was a lot of, let's be honest, there was a lot of bad plays from the Jets. You know, the biggest one that stands out is out of the half, Aaron Rodgers. And I know it was tipped, but Aaron Rodgers hits Devontae Adams in the chest with the ball, and it gets dropped in the end zone. I don't know if that changes the outcome of the game, outside of the Cardinals will have allowed a home touchdown in the month of October or November, as opposed to now where they'll not allow a single offensive touchdown in October or November at home, which is wild to think about. Like, 2 months and there will be no opposition touchdowns at State Farm Stadium. Like, that's absurd when we talk about what this defense was early in the season. And it's the fact that you and I talked about it off there. They do have talent. I mean, Kaiser White, Mac Wilson, I know he was a little banged up. Zaven Collins, they're not great players, but they're NFL-level starters. And we've always talked about that. The Cardinals, under Steve Keim, were always shooting for the moon. It was like, hey, we need 11 All-Pros. It's like, that's always great. Don't get me wrong. You can do that. That's fantastic. That's why certain teams end up being great and, you know, winning all the time. But you need the Mac Wilsons. You need the Kaiser Whites. You need the Zaven Collins that can be next to guys like Buda Baker, who's playing probably the best ball of his career. Would you agree with that?
Pretty close. It's definitely in the last 2 years, and probably since 2020. 2020 was a really, really good year for him.
They just have a superstar in the making, and I know, and I hate saying that, and people know I don't like to speak in hyperbole, but I'm sorry, Jess, like, Garrett Williams is
so good.
Like, that draft pick, if he remains healthy, that and I love Paris Johnson. He looks like a franchise left tackle. Obviously love Marvin Harrison Jr. Think he's going to be an All-Pro receiver. But Garrett Williams might have been the best pick, because it wasn't obvious, right? Like, yeah. Paris was obvious.
Well, and like, when you have a good left tackle, it's not flashy, it's just good. When you have a good cornerback, it's a difference maker, because, like, you completely eliminate throwing to his area, or he's making plays.
Well, and did you see that?
He's so physical too. That's the fun part too. He didn't get his hands on any balls, but he's all over the place. He's in great in coverage. He's physical. He's been so good.
And you saw the stat coming out of this game, right?
He allowed
the most catches that he's allowed all season, Jess. He allowed 4 receptions for 3 yards.
Yards. Oh, man.
So that's the thing, is like you said, you know, and again, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but you look at what Patrick Peterson was, right? Patrick Peterson was a different type of corner. Patrick was one. I mean, Patrick was a freak. Now, we know there was probably some supplements that were helping him for a while, but like, he was 6'1", 210 pounds, and he moved better than anybody probably in the history for a guy that size, right? Like he was
just erased guys.
And so people didn't even throw at him, but not just that, he was a guy that like was just this amazing cover guy. Williams is extremely good in coverage. He's not Patrick Peterson level good, but he's very good. But the difference is Williams wants to be near the line of scrimmage and hit people. Like this dude loves football. And to see him turning into a superstar before our eyes is just such a cool, cool thing to see, man. Because it was just so unexpected. And not because he wasn't good in college, but to come back from the injury that he sustained and then to see him play at that level, he's a special cat, man. And I'm excited about it. Jalen Thompson was out this game, so we got Rabbit. Man, did he look like he's going to be a star too, right? And you hate to start having conversations like this, and especially in a season like this, but like having Rabbit, you're like, hey, you remember those two expensive safeties that we always discuss? Maybe you don't need both of them. And that's a conversation we'll have down the line, right? But like he played really well. He's an incredible tackler. He's got to get better finding the ball. That's his one thing. I think he had a chance for a pick and he just, you know, the ball was past him before he's ready. But again, rookie, like we talked about with Trey Benson, like it's time. It's those type of things. And then do Zaven. It's not what we wanted. I get that. And then they moved him to edge, and it's still not what we want, right? Like, oh, he's not an edge, like he's not putting up sack numbers. But this dude is a hammer on the edge as a run stopper. He plays with a fantastic motor, and he is one of the leaders on this defense. And the thing that I think gets overlooked is that they can use Zaven in coverage, so he gives them the ability to do different things, right? Like they can line him up like he's gonna blitz and then drop him into coverage, or they can put him on the edge and not to get too technical, but they can green dog him, which means that they can drop him into coverage from his defensive end spot and disguise things. And like offering all of that is so invaluable. Yeah, he's not gonna be Nick Bosa, we get it, man. Like, trust us, you and I would love it too, right? Like
yes,
that would give you 18 sacks a year. That would be fantastic. But he offers something different. They still do need a little help at pass rush. I don't want to overstate anything, but they're getting complimentary football now. Like you said, Jesse Luketa, Xavier Thomas each get a sack. Buddha had a sack. They're getting complimentary football. They're creating havoc at the line. They're just playing at such a high level. And now, you know, again, moving forward, we get to see something different, right? Seattle hasn't been the offense we expected them to be. And their lull over these last six games, you know, with one game against Atlanta with that win, has offered us a glimpse of, you know, they're not as good as we expected. That being said, now you, as Arizona Cardinals, have to go do it. And it can't just be like, oh, well, you know, they weren't good against this team. Because, I mean, their last game, they still put up 424 yards of offense. They just had three turnovers, right? They have a game against the Lions where they put up 516 yards of offense. That Lions defense, and that was, you know, pre-Aiden Hutchinson injury. And that Lions defense is great, man. And so they're still dangerous. So, again, you just get more tests that will build to what we talked about at the beginning, right? If you end up at 10-7 or, you know, God forbid, 11-6, and you win the division, you finish as the 3 seed, like, you're going to see a good offense the first round of the playoffs. Like, go win a playoff game. That's the next. That'll be the end of the season conversation you and I have once they win the division. And we're like, okay, now it's changed. Now we don't care that they snuck into the playoffs, and that's all that mattered. Win a game now. You know, that'll be as we adjust at the end of the season.
Let's give one more talk, and it's about Buda Baker coming to next in Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Buda Baker playing great football, and yeah, we'll talk about that coming to next in Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Buda Baker's playing incredible football. We talked about it, but it was what Jonathan Gannon said after the game that I think people are starting to notice, and Howard wrote about it, that now is the time to get a deal done or whatever. But Gannon said, you can't put a price on what Buda does because it's more than just on the field. I'm like, unfortunately, you do have to put a price on it. You do have to put a price on it, and the Cardinals have to make that decision. Have they reached the point with Buda and to lesser or maybe even greater fashion with James Conner? Can they afford not to re-sign them with how this season has gone?
You know, it's really tough, man. And the reality of it is those two, the way the team is built, they probably cannot afford to let them go. And that's a tough one because, as you and I have talked about quite a bit, like, it's not ideal, right? And that's not a shot at Buda. It's not ideal. But I'll say this. I don't know if it was the change of coaches. I don't know if it was the contract situation. I don't know what it was, but this Buda Baker seems much more, or the fact that they were just going to be bad. I don't want to forget that. This Buda Baker seems much more motivated than the last Buda Baker.
Do you think maybe it's partly the contract? He's more than that. I don't want to suggest that he's just playing for his contract, but he is an extra level of dialed in. And could it be as simply as this? He's 100% bought into Coach Gannon.
And that's where I'm at with it. Like, is that what it is? So here's the hard part, Jess, with Buda. I think the first thing that you acknowledge is that he is a leader of this team. I think the second thing you acknowledge is that he's going to be 29 in January. So when they make the playoffs, because we're going to start manifesting this, Jess, let's do that right now. So when they make the playoffs this year, he will be 29 years old when that playoff game takes place. So that begs the question, the guys that just got paid, Jesse Bates, last year, 2023, he was 26 when he signed his 4-year $64 million contract, so 16 mil-ish a year. Antoine Winfield, you're not really touching that. That's a young man's contract. They signed him for $484 million. So here's my question. If you're the Cardinals, how much are you willing to go? And if you're Buda, what do the numbers have to look like? And so my question becomes for Buda, is he willing to do basically a 3-year deal in that, $48 million range? So right in line with what Jesse Bates got, and even if it's a little more, let's say 350, right? Are you willing to do that? And then if you're the Cardinals, how do you shape it that you can get out of it that age 32 year without getting killed, right? So, I mean, obviously the great thing is you have, what, 120 million-ish next year?
Yeah.
So you can really front load his contract and make it so he's off the books, again, in terms of guaranteed money in year three, as opposed to what Steve Keim used to do, which was backload the contracts. And so, you know, you were paying him dead money when he was 35 and 36 and not on the team anymore, right? So that'll be the one thing that I would ask is 3 and right around that 45 to 55 range, is that going to be enough to get things done? Or is he going to expect $20 million a year? And that's where it becomes...
Not that we're saying that he shouldn't get that, but maybe the Cardinals shouldn't pay that.
Right, and that's why I said it has to be I feel like just talking about now, 318 is probably where the max I would go. 354, guarantee 40 of it, which is a lot of money. And just basically you're guaranteeing the first 2 years of his contract, right? Like, hey, we'll guarantee this. This is our good faith to you. You'll be 31 at the end of those 2 years, right? Technically 32 playing in the playoffs. So, like, let's all be on the same page for this. It's just, man, like you said, for Buddha, is he willing to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be. And maybe the route is the Buddha part. Maybe it's the Jalen part where you.
Well, and that's kind of where my head is. I think we like Jalen. He's a good ball player. Don't get us wrong. But I think it's got to be, he's got to be the odd man out in this situation, especially with how Rabbit played. I mean, we're talking about the Cardinals have the 5th and 15th ranked salary safety, and they're not getting, and one of those guys is not playing up to that.
Not that JT's not playing well, but JT is playing very well within his scheme, just not production. Like, you're not getting the stats that you want from him.
And they do have an out after this year. They would only take an $8 million dead cap hit instead of the 13 plus. So they, you know, that was one of the Keim deals that he didn't kerfuffle from a negotiation standpoint. But it might also be one of those things that they can handle both for one more year, right? Because I mean, they do have, he does have a void year after 2025. So I don't know, man. Like, it could be one of those things where you can get away with it for 1 year because you do have so much money. And then you kind of, I don't want to say go all in because that makes it sound like the window closes. I mean, and we're talking about safeties. No offense to any of the safeties out there. My kid's a safety, so I love you. But like, we're still talking about safeties, right? Like, you can go get one if you need one. And I think that's how you have to look at this. And again, you look at it like Xavier McKinney is a top paid guy. He's very good. We talked about Antoine Winfield, Kyle Duggar. So like, all those guys are the ones right above Buddha. But like, other guys like Minka Fitzpatrick, Jesse Bates, Justin Reed, like all those guys who are elite at the position as well, they're below Buddha. So it's like, again, no shade at Buddha, but like, do you really expect to be the highest paid safety in the NFL? Like, is that a realistic thing that you can expect from this team? Or can, like, they come to an agreement. And I think that's where it's going to come down to. And you and I have talked about this before. The David Mugaleta factor, right? Like, that dude's a shark, man. And he's going to expect a lot for Buddha. So that'll be what's interesting to kind of watch and see.
Yeah. Right? So maybe the last off season of safeties is going to change things. We'll wait and see. It's going to be an interesting off season. Very, very, they've got so much room, but they've got key guys. And obviously we'll talk more of this, but it's hard because the two guys, you argue that, like, on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, you could probably look at the two guys that are the most indispensable in terms of what they mean to the team, and that's Boone and that's James Conner. And yet you happen to have players laying in wait who could replace them for much less money. But
right, and that's the
this, but won't be the same type, won't have same the same type of impact. They might produce similarly, but they won't be the same sort of impact.
Right, and that's what it's going to be. I mean, and that's the thing, is what the one thing we've said about Jonathan Gannon's defense is that the positions that for some reason Steve Keim loved to spam with high picks and high prices, inside linebacker and safety, those guys are very replaceable in Jonathan Gannon's defense. He likes front four guys that can rush the passer and big, long, physical corners. That's what's important to him. And so it'll be an interesting kind of to watch how that all works out in this at the end of this.
Yeah, it's gonna be real interesting. So we'll talk more about this in the weeks to come, but we will have one more show this week as we'll kind of look at the weekend coming up. Obviously we won't have things for the Cardinals because they will not be playing. We'll talk about the schedule coming up this weekend. We'll talk some prop bets and things like that. It'll probably be a little shorter show, but yeah, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sears podcast about Sarah Cardinals talk on the way. That's Seth Cox. I'm Just Root. Thanks again for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.